You are tuned to the Nighttime Podcast, focused on the fringe of Canada.
It may be a side effect of reading too much nonfiction, or due to a lifelong interest in seeking out the many unusual events that happen every day in our world, but over the years, I've become an expert people watcher. In fact, it's become almost an unconscious reflex. If something or someone appears out of place, to me, it's like a blinking light among the mundane that I can't just ignore. The result of this is that I can hardly leave the house without seeing something that makes me wonder, what's up with that? It's become almost a running joke among my friends and family that wherever I go, the unusual seems to follow me. I do know that chance alone can't be responsible for the many bizarre things I casually witness. I believe it most likely to be a mix of keeping myself in tune with the mood that surrounds me, keeping my eyes and ears open, and probably more than I like to admit due to an overactive imagination. Regardless of the cause, it certainly has kept my life interesting. Now, with my personal background out of the way, the seed for this episode started during a recent trip to the Tim Hortons coffee shop with my 3-year-old son. As we waited in line, we found ourselves in a scene that to me felt similar to one pulled from a David Lynch movie. Behind us in line was a young couple that must have decided they needed a coffee in the middle of their breakup. Initially, it was his quiet sobbing that caught my attention, but I couldn't help but overhear her explaining to him that he'll find someone else and he'll be better off. And just as I looked for a way to tune them out, a customer's cell phone began to ring at a piercing volume from the seating area of the restaurant. Oddly, this ringtone was unlike any I've ever heard. It was the sound of a shrieking woman crying out in terror, like something from a horror movie. As everyone in the restaurant shifted their attention to him, the middle-aged, well-dressed man rummaged through his jacket pockets, trying to find the phone to silence the ring as quickly as possible. Upon answering, he then began a casual conversation about what to have for supper, but all the while with his phone in speakerphone mode. I can only assume he had no idea the phone was in speaker mode as he held it tightly to his ear for the duration of the call, forcing all of the Tim Hortons patrons to listen to him and his wife try to decide if they should take out pork or chicken, again all the while trying to overcome the difficulty in hearing each other due to the unconventional use of the speakerphone setting. Now, once I accepted that the vibe was a little odd in the coffee shop that day, it became my turn to order. As I approached the register, my son noticed a Timbit had fallen from its tray into the bottom of the baked goods display that forms the front of the ordering counter. He found it hilarious that the Timbit was hiding and couldn't resist banging on the glass and shouting, "I see you, Timbit!" Now, as I rushed out of the store with my son on my arm, I thought to myself, like I often do, that despite how mundane our world is on its surface, we're constantly surrounded by unusual events and interactions. We just need to be perceptive enough to allow them to make themselves visible and have a curious mind that makes us ask questions like, why did he have that as his ringtone? Is he a proud serial killer? Or was it just a joke an obnoxious coworker played on him? As we walked home, myself enjoying a coffee and my son his blueberry muffin, inspiration struck. I thought with many of my prior topics being unique, one-in-a-million type occurrences, I wanted to challenge myself to compile a collection of unusual stories set in the most average of places possible. Tonight's story will be the first in this ongoing series that I'll call Strange Places. The focus of tonight's being the many wonderful and weird things that happen at our beloved Tim Hortons coffee shop. For my international listeners, Tim Hortons is an incredibly well-known coffee shop in Canada. I say well-known as opposed to popular, as it can be quite a polarizing topic here. Bringing up Tim Hortons coffee is not unlike bringing up a religious or political affiliation. Everyone seems to have a strong opinion on most aspects of the business, be it the quality, the prices, or simply its down-home atmosphere. Since this is my podcast, I will say their coffee has been my preferred ever since my dad forced me to drink one in my teenage years as a way to wake myself up after a night of bad choices. Now, to describe the feel of the restaurant to someone unfamiliar, this is not one of those fancy coffee shops that you sit in with your laptop, or the kind that have French names for things. This is the kind of coffee shop that the average Canadian can sit down, read the flyers, and make small talk with the stranger at the neighboring table. Now, to sum up the social relevance of Tim Hortons, I'll leave that to someone who's intimately familiar with what makes Canadians tick. Mr. Graham Steele served as an MLA for 12 years and as Nova Scotia's finance minister for 3. When I asked Mr. Graham Steele to describe the role Tim Hortons has played in his political career, he had the following to say.
For people not from Canada or Atlantic Canada, it's hard to explain just how important Tim Hortons is to the culture. This is by far the dominant coffee shop, particularly here in Atlantic Canada. When you're traveling around, as a politician does, you realize that Tim Hortons is where you want to be. If you have a meeting to set up, if you want to talk to people, if you want to be seen, then you got to go to Tim Hortons. I think I've been in every Tim Hortons in Nova Scotia. It's just a fundamental part of the social culture here in Atlantic Canada.
And it's such a cross-section of our public when you walk into Tim Hortons. That's one of the things I'm so fascinated with. There's a little bit of everybody in there.
Everybody goes, you know, high and low, rich and poor, educated, not just everybody goes to Tim Hortons.
Absolutely. And I'm thinking, as a politician, some of the stuff I overhear when I'm in Tim Hortons, I sometimes would be afraid to show my face in there.
Well, this is the thing, is if you want to see and be seen, then you want to go to Tim Hortons. The flip side of that is if you're trying to sneak in or out of town, you definitely don't want to go to Tim Hortons. Then, of course, during elections, politicians will plan their days around, you know, the busy times in a Tim Hortons. So they'll go in deliberately when there's a lot of people, go all around, shake hands, and it's a great way of seeing a lot of people in a short period of time.
Yeah, maybe what the politicians could do is just go in at the busy hour and just get a show of hands and make the decision right there.
I've never seen anybody do that, but it's not a bad idea.
Now we should all be on the same page. Like it or not, Tim's undoubtedly plays a role in the lives of many Canadians. But Canadians can be strange, and Tim Hortons can be a strange place. And that's really what this episode's all about. To prepare for the episode, I combed through newspapers, I begged and pleaded on social media, and I even called in a few favors. But what I ended up with are three stranger-than-fiction stories I pulled from the historical record and two listener-contributed stories, all set within the coffee shop we all know and love, Timmy's.
You know why Tim Horton donuts are always fresh, Dad? Because you keep eating them.
Always fresh, don't you keep eating them. Tim Horton cookies.
Cookies? Gonna help keep Tim Horton cookies fresh too, Dad?
It would be impossible to begin a collection of unusual stories set in Tim Hortons without including the most interesting week that the quiet town of Little Bredor in Cape Breton Island has ever lived through. This Tim Hortons is conveniently located just off of Highway 105, which passes through Little Bredor, an ideal location to serve as a town square and to provide passing motorists with their daily fixes. Well, at least it seemed like an ideal location prior to September of 98 when the massive crowd started to arrive, lawn chairs in hand, all hoping to catch a glimpse of their savior, Jesus Christ. Although the first witnesses to his appearance have never publicly stepped forward, the commonly told version of the events is that the local couple were driving down the 105 highway as the sun set on Sunday evening. In the sky, they noticed an unusual beam of light piercing the clouds that they've described as having a heavenly appearance. As they watched it shine down, it seemed to suddenly change its course and direct its narrow beam of light directly into the brick exterior of the Tim Hortons. Overcome by a sudden strong sense of emotion, they slammed on their brakes, stopping their car in the middle of the highway, and watched the beam of light slowly dissolve, revealing Christ's image imprinted on the red brick wall of Tim Hortons that overlooks the highway. It wasn't until Tuesday that word spread and the crowds, initially in the hundreds, started to gather. Aside from Tim's being packed to capacity, it was determined that the clearest view of the apparition was from across the street in the parking lot of the comically named Lick a Chick restaurant, a popular fried chicken shop, and their parking lot quickly began to fill up as well. In the beginning, it was locals who heard the rumors while getting groceries or from coworkers during the day, but as they came and witnessed it themselves, many were shocked and moved by the sight and were compelled to spread the word further. Lori Steele, a resident of neighboring Glace Bay, heard about Christ's appearance while at the mall. Skeptical, she came to see what the fuss was about, and upon seeing the Lord, became weak in her knees and was quoted as saying, "I can't believe it, it's the face of Christ. His hair, beard, robe, he's here." The following day, now Wednesday, the crowds continued to grow as people from the neighboring areas heard of their Savior's appearance. With the Lick a Chick and the Tim Hortons properties now packed to capacity, onlookers began to bring lawn chairs and coolers, and the scene began to take on the appearance you'd expect of a parade. Rough estimates put Wednesday's crowd at about 3,000, a little more than the population of Little Bordeaux. Describing the scene at the Lick a Chick restaurant, longtime cashier Germaine Allman said it was the busiest night of the restaurant's history by at least 10 times, and she thanked the smell of their fried chicken that enveloped the crowd as being too much for many to resist, leading to lineups that surrounded the entirety of the building. With the story now hitting the national press on Thursday, the message is now beamed across the country and interest was beginning to hit a fever pitch. Very quickly, safety at the scene was a serious concern. The crowds, now impossible to count, were simply described as being scary. Police were being flooded with complaints from local residents of people parking in their driveways or on their lawns. The Department of Transportation was on the scene as their busy highway traveled through the center of what was now starting to look like Woodstock, and members of Tim Hortons' executive offices attended to provide support to the store owner and staff and to try to come up with a plan to deal with what was happening. As city officials began plans to block off the highway and neighboring streets to avoid traffic in the area, a simple fix to what was quickly becoming a major problem was found. Theorizing that coincidence of light may be the cause of the apparition's appearance, during the weekend the exterior lights that shone from above onto the bricks of the Tim Hortons were replaced. And with the new lights, Jesus has left the building. As quickly as the story spread and the crowds gathered, they dispersed. Within a matter of days, the only crowd on site was the crowd of retirees flipping through newspapers. Before we move on to our next story, let's hear Thomas, a listener from Georges River in Cape Breton, share an experience he recently had at a Tim Hortons restaurant.
I had to kill some time before work, so what I would do is I would just go into the Timmy's and, you know, get myself a coffee and a bagel or whatever and sit down, and I'd wait maybe about, I think it was about maybe 45 minutes. I did my usual ritual in the morning, and I had received a new tablet, and I was still tinkering with this tablet. It was the first tablet I've owned, and I was, it was a bit different than a phone or whatever, so I was tinkering around with it and getting used to the operating system, and I had my headphones. I had some headphones, and I was grabbed the Wi-Fi at Tim Hortons there, and I was tinkering around Facebook and stuff. And a friend of mine put up this. He always puts up really interesting videos that you should check out. So what I did was I clicked on the video and I had it playing, and the video said, you know, this footage of this ship in rough waters will blow your mind or whatever, which is, you know, a lot of stuff like that is clickbait now. But anyway, his videos are specifically more interesting than usually all the rest of the garbage. So I was looking at it. It's very quiet and very, very plain. It was very, this ship, you know, like up and down, and I was staring at it. And then suddenly, it turned out to be one of those pop-up screamy face videos. The bugger got me, and he got me really good, because I'm sitting in Tim Hortons with these buds in my ears, silent as a church mouse, and suddenly this in my face, and I shrieked like a very, very serious, fight or flight shriek in the middle of Tim Hortons. With no warning, everybody, you know, did their spin around. And the thing I'll never forget was a lady that had been working there, one of the workers, came around the counter because she didn't see what happened. She thought somebody had been hurt. She ran around the counter to ascertain, you know, what's the situation. She looked ready to do whatever needed to be done. It was incredible. But I just spun around and I looked at her. I pulled the earbuds into my ear. I said, it's nothing. I'm okay. It was just one of those, and I held up my tablet, and I was waving it at her, and I said, it was just one of those screamy face videos, you know, on Facebook. And she looked at me, and I realized in that moment that this woman probably had no idea whatsoever what I was talking about. So I appeared to be very, a crazy person. So what do? You just sort of sink back to your whatever, and you...
Just finish your coffee.
And that's it. But that happened. It was very embarrassing. And now in retrospect, very funny. But that's that's my story, and I'm sticking to it.
That's incredible, Thomas. Thanks for sharing that with me, buddy.
You're most welcome.
Our next story comes to us from the Tim Hortons on Barrington Street in Halifax, Nova Scotia. This particular Tim Hortons sits just on the edge of downtown Halifax and is a popular stopping spot on many morning commutes. As it would turn out, in this particular Tim Hortons, it wasn't only coffee and donut fiends that paraded through the drive-thru, and I'll tell you all about that now. This all started in April of 2000 with store manager Rochelle noticing an unusual trend among customers of her store's drive-thru window. They were often requesting 15 packs of Timbits. Anyone familiar with Tim Hortons knows Timbits don't come in packs of 15. Hearing the incorrect request a few times initially, she chalked it up just to an odd coincidence. But as these odd orders continued, her suspicions were put into high alert. To get to the bottom of what may be going on in her store, Rochelle began wearing a wireless headset and listening in on the orders being placed by customers in the drive-thru. Her plan was to use the process of elimination to determine which employees corrected the customers and who accepted the incorrect orders. It only took a matter of days before the manager overheard a drive-thru customer requesting the non-existent order size and watched two of her employees, both in their early 20s, bring a coffee cup from a back room towards the window. And that's when she sprung into action. Before the customer was able to receive the order, Rochelle grabbed the cup and pulled the lid off, discovering a small bag of marijuana sitting in the bottom. As the motorist drove away without 15 Timbits or any marijuana, Rochelle phoned police as well as the store owner and ordered the two conspiring attendants into the back room. Not surprisingly, both were fired on the spot and both arrested for drug trafficking. Also not surprisingly, the press had a field day with the story and the drive-thru dope dealers, airing their names for friends and family to see and making the 15-pack of Timbits scheme the stuff of legend. When the case finally made its way to the courts, the accused, who was actually seen bringing the cup to the window, for our purposes we'll call her Kay, she pled guilty and received probation and a small fine. As far as her co-accused, charges against her were dropped after Kay's guilty plea, leaving Kay left holding the figurative bag, or in this case, the figurative coffee cup. Now here's where things really get interesting. The timeline and details of the events that I just went through are based on what was reported by the major media, as well as referenced during Kay's sentencing. However, the story doesn't end there. Much like any story worth telling, there are two very different sides to this one. Now, 15 years after the event, I managed to get in touch with an older and wiser Kay, and she agreed to share her side of the story with the listeners of the Nighttime Podcast. I'll now play the conversation I had with Kay, and she'll tell her version of events, as well as to discuss the repercussions this event has had on her life. We've heard the story, I've read the news articles, but now that I have you on the line here, I'm curious for you to tell me how this started.
It all started, there was one lady who worked at Tim Hortons, and her boyfriend apparently was a dealer. So every day, two people would come through the drive-thru. It was only two people. Mm-hmm. And they would ask for her.
Okay.
She would just put it in the cup and give it to them out the window.
Okay, so it was these two particular people came through to see one particular girl working there who was really doing mm-hmm. it on behalf of her boyfriend?
Yes.
How did you become involved in this?
When they came through the drive-thru, she was on break. And they asked me if I could go and grab her.
Mm-hmm.
So I went out back to grab her, and she handed me a Tim Hortons cup with the 0.8 of a gram inside of it. So I was going to go with the cup, and then I started to get paranoid, so I put the cup down.
Okay.
And when I put the cup down, my manager grabbed it and, like, honest to God, sprinted out back so she could call the police. That was my honest to God first time ever doing it. My one and only time.
And are we talking about a big quantity?
No, I got caught with a 0.8 of a gram.
Oh, God.
Yeah.
The way I read the article, it seemed like the manager was aware of what was going on and kind of watching it. But I guess it was the other worker that was there that the manager was catching on to. And it just so happened that you were, you know, the lightning struck you basically the time that you
yes.
decided to get involved.
Mm-hmm.
Was the time it all went down. Now, I've read in the news articles the whole thing about a 15-pack of Timbits. What was the operation that the girl had going on?
You know what? That was never, ever, ever said.
Really?
2 weeks before this even happened, Myself, my friend, and the manager were at my friend's house, and she told us about a dream that she had that people were coming through the drive-thru asking for 15 packs. It never, ever, ever happened. As soon as she called the police, she was the one who told the police that there was a 15-pack.
Hmm.
It was never, ever, ever said.
And maybe because it's just such an intriguing story is why the press ran with it. Because every article I've said, even if you, even by that terminology, the 15-packet Timbits is very related to this story. But I...
Oh, it absolutely is. Absolutely.
So as far as you knew, the operation, and I'm calling it their operation, but basically that girl dealing to these two particular people, did you know how long that was going on for? And were you aware of it while it was happening?
I was aware at the end, but it was probably only going on for maybe 3 weeks to a month.
And it was, like you said, it was a 0.8 of a gram that when you actually got caught, a 0.8 of a gram. So it wasn't a large scale operation with, you know, all these strangers coming through. When I read the article, what I thought was maybe it was something that it started off like you dealing with a few friends and then it, you know, mm-hmm. it started to get big and out of control. But it sounds like that's not what actually happened.
Not at all. Not at all.
Wow. And it's just, it's crazy how big the story became and how iconic the whole 15 pack is. And I'm almost shocked that it's not true. I feel like my dream just got crushed.
I know, eh? It's not, it's like the way that the story was portrayed is nothing like the way it went down.
Mm-hmm. Now, when it actually did go down, and like you said, you went to the girl was on a break. You went back to get the cup, and how your manager darted out, and all this sort of thing. What unfolded from there? Your manager finds it, and what happens next?
She called the police.
Mm-hmm.
Me and the other girl sat in the break room until they arrived. The manager showed up, or the owner, I guess, of Tim Hortons showed up, and he had a meeting with us. And then the police came, and they took us both to the Halifax Regional Police Department.
And you were how old were you when this happened?
I think I was 22.
Oh god. So you were terrified.
Oh yes.
Were you and I'm just thinking, if I was in your shoes, I'd be hoping that the other girl stepped up and admitted her involvement as opposed to yours. Did that ever happen, or are you comfortable saying?
No, it never did happen, and I just didn't want to be known as the rat.
Mm-hmm.
So I didn't want to say anything. I just wanted to tell my side of the story. But then my lawyer was the one who said that I should plead guilty, and I didn't know any better. So I did plead guilty.
Can you explain why your name became so closely related to it rather than the other name that was in the story? You're talking about, you've mentioned the other girl who was actually involved, whose boyfriend was the actual dealer. Why is it that your name is so prominent in all the articles as opposed to hers?
Because when it came to court time, my last name came first on the docket when we were called to court. So once I pled guilty, all of her charges were dropped. So now it all looks like it was all me.
Yeah. So due to the order of the alphabet, you were the first one up, and you pleading guilty takes away the case that they would have against her being guilty.
Right.
And the media would have no reason to report on her because they have, you know, documents that show you've been charged and you're guilty. So I guess, yeah, I could see how that would happen. And that's very unfortunate.
Yep.
After that happened, you pled guilty. I understand you had probation and you paid a small fine. But given the oddness of the story, you know, and I've read in the media, the CBC and the different news outlets kind of poking some jokes at the whole situation, there was a lot of attention on it. How did it feel to be you with your name being so related to the story? How did it feel? I'm sure all your friends and family knew what happened.
Oh, everybody knew what happened. I was the laughing stock. It was horrible.
And for how long did that last?
Oh, probably a year. I was even mentioned on Mike Bullard. Like it was crazy.
Mike Bullard, that's a throwback.
Yeah, it was horrible.
Yeah. And now we've all had silly things happen to us when we're younger. It's just, again, yours is so unique and the media got involved. Now you're older, wiser. Looking back on it, what are your thoughts about it?
Oh, there would be many things that I would change looking back on it now.
Mm-hmm.
I probably would tell the truth. I probably would never have pled guilty.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, there's so many things I would change. I would have never taken the cup and walked out onto the floor.
Mm-hmm. And again, a point eight of a gram, we're talking about, you know, $13-$15 worth of product. You had, if anything to gain, let's just say if you were involved and you were the ringleader, you know, maybe you were making $6 or $8 on the deal. And now here we are 15 years later, and I can hear in your voice, you know, you're still, you know, embarrassed and upset by it.
Oh yeah. Every time I talk about it, my inside shake, my whole body shakes.
And how is it, if you don't mind me asking, how has it affected your life up until now, aside from just, you know, embarrassed or feeling silly? What type of impact would something like this have on your life?
A huge impact. Plenty of jobs I wasn't even qualified for because of a criminal record. They wouldn't even look at me. Many jobs I was on my way. They showed me my desk. As soon as that criminal record check came back, I was done.
Or now in the days of social media, I'm assuming it gets, you know, the story must come back every so often as people look you up or whatever.
Yep. And then you'll see on your newsfeed articles from back then.
Yeah, and nothing goes away. If only if it had have happened, you know, 5 years earlier, that internet side of it at least would have fallen away. No.
Yeah, exactly.
So friends and family and people still bring this up. You know, how often are you hearing about this?
Not as often anymore. My dad might bring it up once in a while because that whole experience he was not a fan of.
And I read, it looks like the media was speaking to your mother as well. I actually read some articles that had her involved, and I know myself how close I am with my mother. If I ever had something nasty happen in my life, the last thing I would want is anybody involving my mother. I'm thinking that must have been a rough time as well.
Yeah, it was actually. Apparently she had called and asked them to just please not run the story, just wait a bit, and if they were going to run the story, please don't use my name right now, just wait until court. But they took it and ran.
Our final story forms the basis of the most incredible documentary yet to be filmed, the story of Robert Shetwynd, the coffee cowboy of Barrington Passage, Nova Scotia. Although it's hard to follow the legal battle that Mr. Shetwynd so passionately fought, it seems his problems all started when the 34-year-old lobster fisherman lost his driver's license due to an April 2000 conviction for impaired driving. A few subsequent driving without a license convictions made matters even worse, and he then made the decision to simply travel by horseback. Like most Canadians, Shetwynd possessed a love for Tim Hortons coffee, a love that brought him through the drive-through window. Just in his case, he was on horseback. At first, things were going fine, staff would serve him, and he and his horse Dylan would trot away. But relations between store management and Shetwynd quickly went downhill, chief complaints being related to the horse being tied to poles in the parking lot and the horse defecating on Tim Hortons' property, a complaint Shetwynd tried to curb by scooping it up with cardboard and dumping it into the nearest compost bin. With Shetwynd and Tim Hortons' management not seeing eye to eye on these issues, in May of 2002, he was ultimately served a protection of property notice by the RCMP, ordering him to stay away from this Tim Hortons. With his belief in a right to travel by horseback as people do by car, unwavering, Robert Shetwynd made the questionable decision to revisit Tim Hortons on horseback on several occasions after the notice was filed, and that's where things really fall apart. Just after 8 p.m. on a Friday evening, RCMP Constable Redden, while on patrol in his cruiser, noticed Shetwynd in the Tim Hortons drive-thru on horseback. Constable Redden and another constable in a second cruiser asked Shetwynd to dismount, which he refused. A short chase ensued, which ended in Shetwynd allegedly threatening the life of Constable Redden and ramming his cruiser with the horse, only to be pepper sprayed and arrested and having his horse Dylan confiscated for a period of time. As a result of the incident, the coffee cowboy faced over 24 criminal charges, served time in prison, and was barred from riding his horse on any public roadway, conditions he's since been charged with breaching. Mr. Shetwynd's unusual tale must certainly also have two sides, but despite my attempts, I've been unsuccessful in reaching him. I can assume that he's up to something interesting. Before we wrap up this episode, let's hear from a listener in St. John's, Newfoundland. Mark, an ex-Tim Hortons employee, had the following story to share.
So as I mentioned to you, I was the only male staff at the Tim Hortons, and it was working the shift till 11 o'clock p.m.
Okay.
So the evening, and some customers came to the front counter and said, there's a naked man in the bathroom, the lady, and the ladies' end. So I was making that in the bathroom. And the way the washrooms were, there was a men's and a woman's kind of beyond the porch, you know?
Yeah.
Like a washroom porch. Mm-hmm. So the supervisor asked me to investigate. So I said, okay, well, I'll go check it out. So I go into the porch to the washrooms, and there's nothing. So I go into the men's washroom, and it's empty. But there's a pile of clothes on the floor, like next to the urinal.
Okay.
Okay, that's weird. So I turn around to come back out, and when they get into the porch, the women's washroom is pushed open, and there's a giant man, like, hiding behind the door. And he's just, like, apologizing to me. He says, I'm sorry. Can you pass my clothes? And I'm like, listen, like, you gotta put your clothes on and, like, get out of here, and I'm not touching any of your stuff. And he's very apologetic. He seems like a nice... Hello.
Did he look disheveled? Was he like, I'm just picturing him covered in mud like a lunatic in there. What did this guy look like?
No, my impression was he was somewhere between completely insane and maybe on some hallucinogenic drugs. He was acting like he was in a good mood, but just naked in the women's washroom at this point. So I told him to get out or I'm gonna call the cops, and I go back, report back to the supervisor, you know, kind of like, what am I supposed to do? So he comes out, and he's got his, like, clothes buttoned up, his shirt, like, all buttoned in the wrong holes and stuff. And it's like, he actually went outside and then started jumping up and trying to smack at the awning.
Okay.
Like, you know, like, 8 or 9 feet off the ground. He's just jumping up under the street, under the awning lights. And he runs off down across the parking lot and, like, inspects the arrow, the drive-through arrow, looks at that, and just runs off down the street.
That's definitely a bizarre experience. Now, the customer who reported this to you, do you know, were they in the bathroom with this guy, or did they just see him go in, or do you know what happened there?
Presumably, they went into the bathroom and found a man and came back out again. I'm not sure that's what happened. They didn't stick around.
Well, that's definitely an interesting story. I'm glad you shared that with me, Mark. I haven't quite heard anything like this come from somebody yet, so it, definitely a unique experience.
Very unique, and hopefully one time.
With that, we will conclude tonight's episode of the Nighttime Podcast. On behalf of myself and the show's listeners, I would like to thank our newest Patreon supporters, and I'm glad to say that the list is a bit lengthy after the great response the launch of the Patreon content received. A massive thanks to Shara, Holly, Candace, Bethany, Robert, Christine, Trevor, Jonathan, Sean, and the most interesting security guard in America, Alex. Together, your support has brought us above our second fundraising goal, and I'm now pursuing a new and improved website that in the future will better enable me to share these stories with you. I would like to thank you for listening to the Nighttime Podcast. If you enjoy your time here, please rate, review, and subscribe to the show on iTunes. I also invite you to join the listener discussion community at facebook.com/nighttimepodcast. If you have any story ideas or feedback on the show, I'd love to hear from you at nighttimepodcast@gmail.com or on Twitter @nighttimepod. And lastly, if you'd like to help the show grow, please, again, rate and review it on iTunes and consider supporting the show at patreon.com/nighttimepodcast. I look forward to talking to you all again soon.
The Nighttime Podcast is written, hosted, and produced by Jordan Bonaparte. Copyright Jordan Bonaparte.